House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Monday, February 8th. We're going to go out of order just a little bit. House Bill 3601, which is scheduled to be last on the agenda, will be carried over. We won't be hearing that today. We're going to then go to House Bill 3634 and open a...
Are we on a work session on that or...
Okay, we'll open a work session on 3634. Here's some additional testimony. Mr. Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, you have before you the -2 and -3 amendments. I just received the -3 amendments this morning from Representative Garrett's office. And I believe Gail Meyer is probably the best person can discuss what the issues are. It does a couple of things. First off, it reduces the amount of information the victim can get. And also, it creates a task force that would study these issues over the interim for next session. I have to tell you that the -2 and the -3, we do not have a fiscal impact yet in either one. We're anticipating the fiscal impact of the -2 soon, probably before the end of the meeting. Maybe just a question someone being out to lunch right now. I think maybe you probably would want to have some discussion on the -3 as to more specifically what the differences are and what the policy reasons for them are.
Okay, Ms. Meyer, you want to come up? And have you had a chance to speak with Professor Ballouf about this yet?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Gail Meyer on behalf of the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Thank you for bringing your attention to Amendment -3. The purpose of the amendment was to take the remaining issues that are in dispute and invest them into a work group that would be sponsored by the parole board, and that work group would be balanced amongst many of the different constituent members, stakeholder members who have a viewpoint on this. And we would ask the parole board work group then to report back to the Interim Committee on the Judiciary November 1. It shall give the committee a report, and it may suggest legislation. So that's what it does in Section 15. It establishes a work group to look at these contentious issues. With respect to what to do in the interim, the bill is designed to basically freeze in the status quo. So making a distinction right now between existing board practices and then the overlay of codification of laws, the idea was to allow the parole board to continue with their current practices throughout the time of the parole of the work group. And as to codification of laws, simply not codify anything new, but also not take anything away that is currently existing. So with respect to the issue of having victims receive copies of psychological reports and the method of them doing so, that stays in. If you look at the -3 on page 3, it says right there, the victim personally or by counsel and the district attorney of the county in which the offender was convicted shall be given access to the information that the board will rely upon in the hearing. That is staying in the -3 because that is existing statutory law. The board is interpreting that phrase to say that the board can give the psychological and psychiatric records to the victim by email or electronically or by mail. But the -3 simply keeps that codification of law present because that's existing law, and it doesn't affect the current board practice. What the -3 does do is that it removes what had been a subsection D in the -2s. The -2s had codified something that was a board practice but which had never been codified. So it would remove this provision. The board may not disseminate the statements of a victim submitted to the board concerning an offender unless the victim authorizes the dissemination. So this is the issue where the victim wants to bring a letter to the board, but the board is saying, inmate and inmate's lawyer, you can't see this. This has generated litigation. Judge Brewer recently in the Court of Appeals issued an order on this saying that the lawyer could receive it. What the -3 does is that it pulls that out. That was new. That was new codification of an existing board practice. By having the dash three remove that, it doesn't affect board practice. The board can still do what the board is doing. So again, the dash three amendment preserves the status quo. It doesn't codify anything new. It doesn't take anything away through codification. The board's practices remain undisturbed. It does set up in section 15 the work group. The work group is ordered. The cruel board establishes the work group. I conferred with the board. They did want it that way. They wanted to have it be a work group that they would convene. That they shall convene a work group to study the method by and extent to which information relied upon by the board in board hearings should be made available to the victim's representative, the district attorney, the offender, and the offender's representative. And then it puts in there that the group should consider procedures that ensure that the board receives accurate and relevant information while promoting fairness and privacy in the disclosure of personal information. This whole issue of dissemination of psychiatric psychological records has generated a lot of email discussion over the weekend. There's overlays here of HIPAA and Oregon public records law. And can I only say to the committee, it even appears to me now more confusing and nebulous. I don't even know if the experts are agreeing right now on all these issues. And I do submit that I think the final product would be a better one if we have a lot of the stakeholders at the table working this through before it become codified. So we're asking for a freeze frame of the status quo while we have a work group look at this, and then they issue a report in November.
Okay, what happens if the work group issues a report in November and we decide we're not going to pay any attention to the work group? Where is the law then?
Thank you, Chair Barker. Given the fact, I think those who are interested in changing the law would be on them to propose legislation. So if proponents of the dash two still wanted to get in their codification of subsection D, they might want to do that. If we wanted to suggest that there might be restrictions on certain activities, then it would be our obligation to do that.
Okay. Additional questions? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions corresponding with the two parts of the dash three amendment. With your permission, Mr.
Please.
Chair. So I'm going to break this up first into the codification issue and then a separate question about the work group issue, because I think distinct parts of the bill. So just to clarify, so regarding the codification issue, that would basically freeze the status quo. Now, So I think I'm clear on this, but I want to make sure, because I think so the status quo ante, I guess, what was the case is that this was considered private, i.e. the victim's impact statement was considered private. Then there was an opinion, which I have not read, issued, written by Judge Brewer, so it is now public record. That's the status quo that you want to preserve. Can you clarify, please?
Thank you. Chair Barker and Representative Barton. In my dash three amendment, I'm really not trying to do anything with respect to Judge Brewer's opinion. I only reference it to say that there really is a legitimate dispute. Right now, there is no codification at all in law, in statute, as to whether or not when a victim submits something to the board can disallow the inmate or inmate's representative from seeing it or anybody else from seeing it. There's no codification of that. The board practice has been to say, this is this is confidential information and it's for board's eyes only and we won't let anyone else see it. That's board practice. Now there had, and the dash three would simply maintain that status quo. There would be no codification on that issue and the board practice would continue as it is, I would anticipate.
And the second part of my question regarding the work group, presumably when we're talking about the work group, I think its formal name, if I'm not mistaken, is the Parole Board Advisory Committee. It's my understanding, and perhaps these questions are best addressed to Mr. Felton, but is that it's essentially an ad hoc group. I don't believe it has a statutory or regulatory basis, but it does essentially already exist. And I gather Mr. Felton, he's already asked the committee for help and clarity on this issue. I suspect he's going to convene that at his discretion. Is that part of the statute actually necessary? Why do we have to enshrine this in statute?
Thank you, Chair Barton and Representative Barton. Over the weekend, which is when I'm dealing with this issue, I really couldn't get a good
I noticed
idea
that, Ms. Meyer.
Of who was on this work group. I knew it existed. What I was told was it was not a creature of statute. It was convened as an advisory group. Some memberships came and went. And so that sort of left me in the vacuum of the weekend of like, oh my gosh, how do I get this thing ready by Monday morning? So in working with Ledge Council over the weekend, we grafted this. This is all permissive. The way in which, if you're looking at the work group language in the dash 3 on page 19, it starts on line 16. It's permissive. The board shall appoint the work group. And it shall be comprised of a balance of views, and it may appoint the following. And so it really gets to decide who they think would be good participants and who wouldn't. And so it's grafted intentionally to be permissive so they can pull this together.
Chair, members of the committee, Representative Barton, I have in the Court of Appeals in front of me Parsons versus the State Board of Parole, order granting motion to inspect sealed material and request for leave to withdraw agency order. The board opposes a motion. The basis disclosure is not in the public interest. The court goes on to say, the court recognizes the board's ability to protect community safety could be compromised if those with information about an inmate were inhibited from sharing the information with the board because the board could not provide confidentiality. However, disclosure to counsel alone does not implicate that concern. Petitioner argues that disclosure to his counsel is necessary for petitioner to obtain meaningful judicial review and for counsel to satisfy his professional obligations to a client. The court determines that irrespective of any ethical duty the counsel otherwise may have to his client, counsel must comply with a court order barring further disclosure of the sealed material. Given the compelling arguments raised by the petitioner, the court concludes that the motion to inspect should be granted subject to the following conditions. That's the essence of the Brewer's decision.
Can I get a copy of that, Mr. Taylor, at your convenience? Can I get a copy of that?
By all means. Thank you. I'll make sure the whole committee gets a copy.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on something like this, it would be very valuable, as I said in the hallway a moment ago, to have something that is approaching consensus, even if that might be impossible at the final analysis. A couple questions. First of all, say again, and apologies if some of it is repetition, what the bill with the dash 3 amendments would, which are new to me, would do to expand, as some would say, victims' rights or victims' ability to participate in a meaningful way in proceedings.
Thank you, Chair Barker and Representative Smith. The dash 3s is designed so that nothing is expanded and nothing is taken away from the status quo.
Okay. I guess what I'd want on the record is commitment. I don't know if Mr. Feldman is here, if anybody else is going to testify about them, but to have at least your on the record commitment that if the bill with the dash 3s were to move out of this committee, that there would actually be work in good faith to give victims more meaningful participation than they have now. And to be very sure that it wouldn't be merely a delay tactic. I am sensitive to trying to get this done in a week, right? This is a short session and challenging to do certain complex things. But I'd want, if we were going to do this, personal assurances, there would be that work in good faith, not merely to try to kill something another day, but in fact to do something good for victims due to this and due to future action.
Chair Barker and Representative Smith, thank you very much for that. In terms of delay, this is why we did put in a time frame that they do have to produce a report in November, so that this is timely. But then secondly, I would point out, Representative Smith, that what the proponents of this bill are seeking are current board practices. Currently, the board is disseminating the psychological records to the victim for the asking. Currently, the board is accepting statements from the victim and not allowing anybody else to see it. So those current board practices are not being affected by this bill. And the purpose of the work group is to resolve the competing interests, because we do think that there are There's forensic and therapeutic concerns about the release of the reports in their entirety. And there might be some HIPAA or, you know, public records law issues there. And with respect to access to evidence against the inmate, there's constitutional implications. So these will be looked at. My understanding from the board is they grapple with these issues delicately every day. Every day these issues come up. You know, somebody wants to give something in confidence. Somebody else wants a copy of something else. They're grappling with a lack of clarity currently in the laws as it relates to privacy interests, public disclosure, the whole gamut. And the thought is, let's get the stakeholders at the table, mash this out, because this is MASH material. The emails this weekend were amazing. And hopefully give the legislature the benefits of our thinking the next time around.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Myers, pardon me because I hadn't had a chance to really review the amendment in the verbiage until just a few minutes ago.
Okay.
And I understand conceptually what you're trying to do, but and you've indicated that you're retaining certain language giving victims access to information. But when and then you have the Section 15, which talks about the work group, and I'm not conceptually opposed to a work group, but I have some problems with the verbiage in that, in Section 15, subsection 1, in that, and I think it creates at least an implication of an internal contradiction between Section 4, 2C, and 3C. So you have to sort of follow this around. When you state in Section 15, sub 1, that the work group will be convened to study the method by and extent to which information relied upon by the board is made available to victim, the victim's representative, et cetera, and go on to talk about the offender as well. It's that extent language that concerns me because we've already indicated in Section 4, 2C, and 3C, there's an acknowledgement that the victim is entitled to the information that's going to be relied upon by the parole board. By implication, this seems to say, but we should go back and take a second look at that. So I wouldn't have a problem with method. I understand your issues regarding methodology and how the dissemination occurs, and I think that can be problematic. I understand the issue about, certain information and how regarding the victim, and I think that we need to hash that out really thoroughly because I want the victim protected as much as possible. But that little bit of language right there vis-a-vis the information that is disseminated to the victim is concerning to me. It seems to, by implication, at least create a question as to how much, or I mean, to imply that there should be some discretion there, whereas you've codified, you've referred to the codified language here where the victim's entitled to certain information. So I'm a little troubled by just that little bit of the language in there.
Chair Barker and Representative Siegler, firstly, let me say that the understanding, the concern is that, quite frankly, both sides are saying the same thing. We're both saying that we want the board to have full and accurate information, but we're sensitive about how it's dispersed to the other side. Right? So we're both saying the same thing. This is what the board's point of view is. We're in the middle of this. But as it relates to the extent to which the information is revealed, as it relates to just the one side of the victim having access to the defendant's psychological, psychiatric records, I can say that from those who know public record law well, there's concerns that current statutory language does not create an exemption of the public records law for the purpose of releasing the entirety of the report. And federal HIPAA law, which I believe may have been enacted since that original language was codified in Oregon, I'm not sure, may disallow this too. So the point is, this is a lot to figure out in short order here. And so my thinking was, let's have us all take a really thorough look at this and see if we can't come to some kind of consensus understanding. I mean, if there's a HIPAA problem or a public records issue, then I think we need to come back to the committee with that in November.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Follow up.
And I understand that that's the point, but I think on the one hand, we're indicating some consensus that victims should be entitled to. Do you understand what I mean? That verbiage relating to the extent of the information that's released seems to put a sort of a cap on those two paragraphs in Section 4.
Chair Barker and Representative Siegler, the current existing statutory authority is that there are access to information. And then the question becomes, does access to information translates to an actual hard copy of a psychological or psychiatric report?
I understand.
I can only say to you that amongst the lawyers with an expertise in public record law and some of the mental health community that I conferred with over the weekend, there's disputes about that. And that's all I can say. There's a dispute. And so, to be honest with you, yes, I think that would be on the table. And we may not be able to carry the day. The point of it is about the dash three amendments. It does not interrupt the current board practice, which is to disseminate these records.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for a second round of questioning. Sorry about that, Ms. Myers. But correct me if I'm wrong, but the dash two amendment essentially codifies existing practice. It codifies the standard, the status quo. With one exception. Sorry, can you clarify?
Yes. Chair Barker and Representative Barton. The dash twos codifies newly codifies existing practice of disallowing the dissemination of statements of victims submitted to the board. So when the victim submits a statement to the board, right now the board's practice is they do not allow anybody to see that.
All right.
Okay. The dash two codifies that. Currently it was not codified, so it codifies that. And that's the one thing that we pull out in the dash three.
I see. So if I may, Mr. Chair, so what if we introduced adopted the dash two amendment, plus Mr. Felton assured the committee on the record that he was going to convene this work group to look through these issues. How would that disrupt your objectives?
Thank you, Chair Barker and Representative Barton. It would disrupt our, because it would be codification, it would be, there would be no motivation of the work group to revisit the issue. And we feel that there is, I don't know of any other due process hearing in the state of Oregon where somebody with the burden of proof isn't entitled to see the evidence against them. I don't know of any other due process hearing in the state of Oregon where there's private secret evidence. And I don't know of any other due process hearing in the state of Oregon where a non-party is imbued with rights that exceed the person whose interests are at stake. And so dash two codifies that. And we think that also codifies something that Judge Brewer has recently spoken to. And so we think there ought to be pause.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Brewer opinion basically says it doesn't fit within the public records exceptions. Therefore, it's disclosable under limited circumstances. Mr. Chairman, as I can represent Barton, what the dash two amendments would do is create, among other things, would create a statutory exemption. So, for example, if this issue were to come back before Brewer again, there would be a statutory exemption. So at least in statutory grounds, it would not be disclosed. No, I believe the counsel, the lawyer for the parolee, raised constitutional grounds. The court did not have to address them because they decided on statutory grounds. Now, when you get into constitutional issues, it gets a bit more complicated. Where it's come up in other jurisdictions, they said, no, it's been a while since I read the cases, but I think their systems are slightly different than ours.
Thank
One
you,
other counsel. Question, if I could, Madam Chair, yeah. Mr. Chairman of the committee. As it relates to HIPAA, there's nothing we can do here today that will implicate HIPAA. I've had discussions with Mr. Felton about this. Representative Barton, you're the one that raised HIPAA Friday, so I went and talked to the Legislative Council's office after the hearing, and they gave me a site, and they said it could be problematic. I talked to a couple other people today, say, well, we're not sure if the agency is an agency that's covered by HIPAA. I think it's a question that Mr. Felton should obviously discuss with his Attorney General and probably get some kind of opinion, because if HIPAA does apply, then maybe problematic in giving out the record of the psychological evaluation of the person seeking parole.
Mr. Chair,
if
I might just follow up on a comment made by Representative Barton. The problem with the dash twos and just asking them the parole board to convene a work group, A, there's no requirement that it do its work. There's no requirement that it mash through these really contentious, delicate issues by November. And it would sanction something that's already posed problem to an appellate judge. What we're trying to do here is say these are legitimate concerns that compete. And I'm simply suggesting that it might be a better forum where we can have a more thorough, thoughtful analysis of it and let the winner prevail. You know, but at least when we talk about them in November, it will be because we know what the answer is with respect to HIPAA and a few other things right now that are unclear.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much for spending your weekend working on that.
Thank you.
I want input from Professor Ballou, since he's spent so much time working on this bill before we do anything. Mr. Dole, do you have anything you want to?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Dole, Crime Victims United. Unfortunately, Professor Ballouf had to work his day job today at Lewis and Clark and teach a class, so he's not there, or he's not here. Crime Victims United is categorically opposed to these amendments. Let me make a few comments, if I could. As far as this work group goes, I have to tell you, Mr. Taylor attended many of these work group hearings. I don't know if it was all of them, but many of them that we had under the advisory committee that was formed after all the problems arose out of the Gilmore case. And I wished I had my calendar here in front of you to tell you how many meetings we had. We had a lot of meetings. They were four-hour meetings. They were eight-hour meetings. They were long meetings. We had Brenda Rockland, one of the most respected persons to ever come out of the AG office, now heads up SAFE, headed up the Lottery Commission, facilitated these meetings. We went through, there were two representatives there at all times from the OCDLA. I didn't see Ms. Myers there at any point. So she doesn't have any real conception of the very difficult issues that we tackled during the course of those meetings and that we resolved most of. So I think that's a non-starter. I don't think that the legislature needs to put into law a work group. And I think actually in many cases, when I look at the members she wants, our membership was much more broad than this. I don't disagree. We may want to add a few people, but I'm looking at her list, and I'm not going to go through it, but it's a little stacked as I see it, quite frankly, from the get-go. The more important thing, though, is let me just address this issue of removing Section 4. This has been the practice ever since I can remember. Had we not brought this bill, we wouldn't even be talking about this because it wouldn't even be on their radar screen. It's been through the courts. It appears to me they want more time and more opportunity to have more criminal defense attorneys raise this to the courts, and that's exactly why the legislature should address this and let victims, let the parole board, let the courts know right here and now that they're not going to be allowed these victims' impact statements. Imagine for a moment. I just have to ask you to put yourself in this place, and I hope you never are, but imagine for a moment you have a family member murdered, and that you're putting some of your deepest thoughts on paper to the parole board. Imagine for a moment that you have had, and I've worked with these families, that you've had a child that has been raped over and over by a pedophile, and that you as a family don't even want to appear in front of the parole board. that you have a person like me deliver those innermost thoughts to the parole board and do some public statements, only the part that they aren't allowed. Imagine you're a woman and you're a rape. I could go right down the line. This is exactly why we want this in the law, is to finally send that message to the court. So those are some of my comments. If anything that this work group can do is we can gather around this issue of ensuring that, and it was the first time I've ever heard of it, this issue of these psychological reports. I agree with Ms. Meyer. We need to ensure that those stay private. And I think that's one of the things that the work group can work on. But I have to tell you, it scares me to know how many of these psychological reports I've had in my hands in the last 15 years. And you know where they all are except for two right now? They've gone through a paper shredder. I happen to keep two because they're ongoing cases that are pretty egregious, and I've got them stuck away in a file in my drawer. But I'm certainly not releasing them to anybody. So those are just some of my comments, and I have perfect confidence in Mr. Felton and his executive director. If for some reason, I hope he doesn't, but if Mr. Felton were to leave tomorrow, that this work group is going to happen. It's as Representative Barton said, it exists now, and there's no reason why we can't tackle these difficult issues.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. I have a question for you. Have we had any members of this committee who have been, you know, engaged to this to the degree that, say, you know, my cohorts to my right were engaged in metal theft or in case, we, you know, with sliming or anything else? Have we had sort of a, you know, bipartisan duo or, you know, or quartet work on this? I don't know what the chair wants to do. I don't know what our plan is, but I remain, as I sit here, still feeling, you know, that we ought to do something and not just exactly sure what that ought to be. And if you wanted to appoint a couple people, that's at least one thing to consider.
Yeah, we're not going to move it today. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I can just say that I myself attended one parole board advisory committee meeting of 3-4 hours or so. I have a hunch. I can't speak, of course, for Mr. Felton for the board, but that the board would welcome more legislative input if anyone else wanted to join me.
Okay, thank you. Any further? This bill, okay, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3634, and I was here. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3695. You can introduce it, and Representative Olson's been working on this over his weekend as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3695 is the metal theft bill. We heard this last week on February 5th, and we had a small work group convene after the meeting, and we made the dash two amendments. And if the chair would like, I'll go through the dash two, or did you want to do that? Okay. The dash two amendments are identical to the original bill with the dash one amendments, except that it removes the expansion to ferrous metals, and it removes the language about the metallic wire insulation. So that goes back to the original Senate Bill 570. And also, it takes out any requirement that the classification codes from the Institute of Scrap Recycler and Cycling Industry Scrap Specification Circular, that's page 6, line 15 through 18. It removes all that. That will help people, help scrap metal dealers describe metal easier. So these were the thoughts from the work group, and we do not have the fiscal on the dash two, but we could suspend the rules if the committee so chooses.
Okay.
Mr. Olson? Chair, I appreciate what Anna did with this, and no, it wasn't a small work group. I would say it was probably like about 20, 25 people, but it was interesting for an hour. And the one thing that she referred to just now, too, is the ISRI report, the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries. This thing, I did not realize how cumbersome this is, that on each description of metal, there's a specific code. And right now, under 570, we're requiring that to be filled out. And we're wanting to just make it plain, simple language description for what the metal is. The law enforcement group that was there was in favor with that as well, because they don't refer to this. So it just didn't make sense to go there. That was one of the things that we did. this group that we have was really kind of neat because we're going to continue to meet. And it's a great group of folks, and it actually, with what Jeff Stone's group that he kind of started throwing together a couple years back with the coalition, it's just kind of a, it's almost kind of mirrored to that. And this will be a great opportunity to still look at Senate Bill 570 and do some work on it.
Okay, do you have amendment to for today?
We do, yeah.
It's the dash two amendment should be in your packet.
Okay.
Chair. Okay, so the first part of it, the page three keeps the requirement for that you don't need a license anymore, so that we'll get scrap metal businesses that aren't licensed, which is the intent of the bill. That's on page three, on the top of page three. That was in the original bill. Also in the original bill is the mental state changes. We changed it to knows or has good reason to know. That's throughout the bill. So you'll see that on page four and on. Let's see. You will see in the motor carrier changes on page eight, that's to make sure that the agent or employee of the owner also includes those licensed motor carriers that Mr. Russell talked about. We talked about that at the last meeting. On page nine, we have the P.O. box changes. So if you have a license that has a P.O. box, you can use that. You don't have to have a street address.
That's along with valid identification. For
right.
Example, driver's
it's
license,
in your driver's
where
license.
They verified the house address, even though it says post office box.
Right. Okay. Before you had to have a street address, and that was problematic. Yeah. The classification code changes that we just discussed were on the bottom of page nine. Some of the other things are just to make consistent with the other changes, and there's an emergency clause at the end. So you'll see we took out the ferrous and the wire insulation. Those are the two controversial points that came up, and that will be something that we'll continue to work on in the interim. Representative Olson's work group.
So we need to suspend the rules.
Yes, we should move the dash twos into the bill and then move to suspend the rules.
Mr. Chair, could we hear from the Mr. Gallagher first before?
Yeah, sure. And anybody else that wants to?
Mr. Chair, I'm Tom Gallagher representing Schnitzer Steel. The amendments work just fine. We're quite happy with them and quite happy with the process.
Thank you very much for
Representative Olson.
And thank you and everybody else for their input on this to help us get it done right. We really appreciate your guys' effort as well.
Pass it on to all the people that were here.
Thank you.
Chair, if I may ask a question of Representative Olson. Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, just what do you think will be the issues that we need to even still, it continues to be a work in progress that we need to work on, you think, for example, if it's possible to anticipate in the next legislative session. I was thinking, it occurs to me, I remember there was an issue with certain exemptions for licensed refuse haulers. I gather that was not time sensitive for various reasons. What other issues do you think will continue to require refinement?
Well, one of the areas that we really need to take a look at, Mr. Chair and Representative Barton, is the issue surrounding vehicles and the scrap that goes into wrecking yards. I mean, they're somewhat exempt out of this whole package, and they're not really considered under the definition of a recycler. And so if that's the case, they don't have to follow these guidelines, and that's an issue most definitely needs to be addressed. Another issue that is a real major concern for the recyclers right now is if a check is returned, having attempted a good faith effort by the recycler to pay to the person who brought in the metal and is returned, and then that individual says, well, gosh, you know, I don't know what happened, it was the wrong address or whatever, they're not at a point through this law to be able to hand over that check right at that point because the law is real specific, has to be through the mail. So that's a real problem. for the recycler. And I mean, that just is, you know, that's almost kind of like bad business. And that's a problem for us.
I remember there was concern originally that I, if I'm the thief, I come in, give you a bad address, and then I come back the next day and get the check anyway. But it is a check, so. Right. But what we don't want to do, what we certainly heard from the recyclers, was we don't want to impede their business.
That's right.
Anymore than absolutely necessary. They're, when they came in and discussed some of the issues they had with it, you know, you hear those things, it was kind of appalling. So I'm glad you've been working to try and resolve that. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I commend Representative Olson for all his work on this. Last session, I think... I mentioned to this committee that I'm concerned, and it's come up in the testimony that we've had this during the last couple of meetings on this, is we want to be sure that I would encourage the work group to be sure that our restrictions are not equal to what's happening in Washington State, so we're not forcing businesses to go to Washington State in how we try to enforce this. I think it's a good intention. Everyone wants to do this to stop the results of the meth sales. But let's be sure that the work group is not putting restrictions that are going to force us to lose more industry in Oregon, Mr. Chair.
Do you have a motion to adopt the dash twos?
So moved. Do we have to move to suspend the rules first, Mr. Chair?
After.
I see.
Move the dash twos into the bill and then move to suspend the rules passed.
I see.
That we adopt.
Thank you.
The dash twos.
Yeah. Representative Stigler moves the dash twos into House Bill 3695. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Need to move to suspend the rules.
Move to suspend the rules for lack of a fiscal and revenue statement on the dash twos.
Move to suspend the rules to adopt
adopt House Bill 3695 as amended.
As amended without there being revenue or fiscal statement.
Yeah. That's good.
Okay. Representative Stigler just did that.
Good.
Yeah. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
Can you repeat the
motion? We're suspending the rules to move this forward. We don't have the fiscal yet.
Without the revenue or fiscal.
Why, Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification, why are we doing that today?
We're trying to keep it moving, although we still won't have a final movement until we get the fiscal.
Is that right? No, we'll move it out of committee today with suspending the rules. Alternatively, we could wait till Wednesday and we'll have the fiscal statement then, or we could move it now. It's up to the committee.
Would the committee like to wait till Wednesday? That would make it, or would like to go ahead and just move it?
There were minimal fiscals on one.
Is there,
I don't see how that's going to
we happen. Have a motion.
Excuse me, sorry, Mr. Chair. We had a dash one, the minimal fiscal on the dash one, and I don't expect any other fiscal on this, on the changes.
Okay.
And there's, that answers.
Okay, we have a motion to suspend the rules to adopt House Bill 3695 as amended. Is there any objection? Maybe we ought to take a roll call vote on this one. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Cameron?
This is on the motion to suspend the rules, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
No.
Representative
Garrett? Aye.
Representative
Krieger?
Aye.
Representative
Olson?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative
Tomei?
Aye.
Representative
Stigler?
Aye.
Representative
Wisnett? Aye. Chair Bacher? Aye. Motion carries. Now we should move the bill as amended to the floor of the DuPass recommendation.
So moved.
Okay. Representative Stigler moves House Bill 3695 as amended to the floor of the DuPass. Is there any discussion on that? Is there any objection? Let's speed that one on, too. So ordered.
Thank you.
That's it. And I'll we'll carry over House Bill's Who's the carrier?
Who's going
to be
carrier. Right, yeah. The guy who's had it on his back for the past several months can keep carrying it.
Keep going.
We're carrying over House Bill 3634 and House Bill 3601 until Wednesday.
Let me borrow that for you.
Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't know we were going to suspend
it. Very.
I'm going to make it clear.